Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Central. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Chris Casso.
Hi.
And, of course, Mr. Cole Hornaday.
I'm watching you, Ben Lawrence.
How are
from a distance.
You all? From a distance.
We're pretty good. We're not too punchy yet.
No,
We already did that part.
We are giggly, but yeah. We're not like... I'm so exhausted, I can't feel my feet. So.
I can't feel my face when I'm with you, you know? But I like
Can
it.
Can I feel it for you?
Consent
you didn't
is
get
sexy.
It.
I didn't? I never get it.
I didn't?
It's
cute.
It's a cold, rainy, blustery day here in Seattle, Washington. Let's get on with the news, friends, shall we? A number of weeks ago, we talked about how Diamond Distributing had refused to distribute the Cimmerian due to complaints by Conan's publisher. Well, that has all reached a conclusion, and Blaze Publishing has reached an agreement with Conan to allow it to publish the U.S. editions of the series that is being described as uncensored.
Mm-hmm.
Is it naughty? Is
probably.
Conan naughty?
Probably. It's Conan.
It's Conan. He really likes to... Well,
do you see all those ladies at his feet?
Yeah.
Do you think they're just laying there?
Never read a Conan comic.
So, they're tired.
I was so in love with when Dark Horse...
Because of
a couple
Conan.
Years
exactly.
ago when... Kurt Busiek was and Kerry Nord were doing the original series adaptation for Dark Horse Comics. They were sticking really closely to the books, and they were also they also wanted to be very, very present to the pulp roots. Mm-hmm. And you know, they had and the font had, was like done in Underwood typewriter print, and like you know, it looked like it was typed on a dirty ribbon because the O's were blacked in. And I had never been a fan of Conan before, ever. I mean, I have mixed feelings about the Schwarzenegger film. Design wise, I think it's really, you go back and look at it and you're like, this is all practical stuff happening here in these costumes.
I've
anyway,
never seen it.
You've never seen the Milius?
Go to Scarecrow down over in Roosevelt.
Yeah. Anyway, you don't need that tangent from me, but I've never been a Conan fan, but what happened was I was so excited about that comic book that I went back and got all the Howard books because they had reprinted them in these collected editions, and I started reading them, and I don't remember them being sexy. I think that was an embellishment that came from the 70s with the Frank Frazetta covers and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't remember there being sex. There was just a lot of violence. There were references to sexy women. But of course, remember, it's like this stuff was written in like the 30s and they're pulps.
It's gonna be
so they show
so.
Off a little ankle then. Hey, so.
Well, I mean, a Blaze says, a Blaze describes this as the true Conan, unrestrained, violent, and sexual, just as Robert E. Howard intended.
I think that's stretching
not
it.
Wrote.
I think I'm not a Conan scholar, and there are scads of Conan scholars out there. And if you are a Conan scholar, tell me I'm wrong. I'd love to hear it. But
write us at perfectbumpodcast@gmail.com.
I think also there's the over time, certain things just absorb elements of what the pop culture thinks was a part of the thing.
I'm wondering,
even
if
though it wasn't,
yeah.
And like you just said, those ladies sure are tired. It's like, yeah, you have enough ladies like that. Oh, something's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the Conan stories that I recall reading, his goals are not sexual. He wants to rule. He wants to be a king, and he will slay his way. But ultimately,
and he did slay his way. Okay, this is too much.
But you know, the funny thing is, even in it's been a while, but even in the Dark Horse ones, I think they make it a point like he gets drunk and rowdy and he takes a lady with him. And I remember like Kerry Nord drew some faces of him where it's like he's doing like a weird like face where it just looks like a barbarian that's like, yeah, I got my lady because I just killed everybody.
Yeah. Right.
So I think there's just like this overall assumption because in the 70s, we got a lot of really terrible barbarian movies because of Conan. Mm-hmm. And there's a series called The Death Stalker. They're terrible, and they're very
the Mystery Science Theater. Them,
oh, they've
point.
Done them. Yeah.
Yeah,
they're very rapey. Rape is a language in those things, and so I think it's just like it's that rolling ball of like, of course, Conan must have done it if Deathstalker did it.
Yeah,
you know. So yeah. I just think it's emerged into it.
Yeah.
But what eventually happened is that I feel like with the Marvel comics and stuff like that, they, you know, they used to. I don't. I don't believe they adapted every one of the Howard stories that they got darn close to it at Marvel. And then they were left to their own devices to keep perpetuating this property. And I think that's the that is part and parcel to the snowball effect or the steamroller effect or the rolling log effect. What was the metaphor you used?
All of those work.
Yeah. Great. But what intrigued me about Blaze's adaptations, would they look like at least they were going back to the original pulp text that they were adapting. But, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of fast and loose stuff around Conan. It's like Red Sonja. Well, Red Sonja is...
Sorry,
like,
you guys keep setting up these jokes. I got to stop.
Retailers will be able to adjust your orders on Queen of the Black Coast, number one and two. And a show of appreciation, I'm sure you'll appreciate this, for their support. For you as retailer support, Ablaze will offer its 10-copy incentive covers originally priced at $3.99 free with purchase as part of the order adjustment process. Mm-hmm. Have you had any call for these comics in store?
I had 2 pre-orders when they were first offered, and everybody's just kind of forgotten about them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the FOC went, and I adjusted my orders. Mirka and Delphal has a variant.
Yep.
Yay.
Yep.
They're going down on that sexy route, you know? But, I still kind of trimmed my order a bit because we just have too much stuff and there's already a Conan comic. So
Yeah. I don't think I got any pre-orders. I think I just said these people will want this comic.
Yeah.
And they probably will.
IDW, the company behind Lock and Key, which is a favorite of ours, October Faction, Transformers, Ghostbusters, TMNT. Well, they reported major financial losses in 2019. They say the fourth quarter of fiscal 2019 revenue was boosted by delivery of V Wars and the majority of the October Factions episode to Netflix, but I guess their licensing is probably just way too expensive for all these products.
It could be a factor, yeah.
They're hoping to pull a profit by 2021.
Yikes.
Which sounds like my favorite baseball team here in Seattle, the Mariners, say, we're not really going to be competitive until 2021. Well, can't you do that now?
All I could think of is, there's that one Simpsons character, like Gil, who's always part of like a failing company or something. Mm-hmm. I just imagine he's there in the boardroom. He's like, hey guys, just throw Gil a bone here.
Is it just when like all the robots become gay and that's where all the money's going to come in or something?
That's where it should be, yeah.
2021?
Seriously. Yeah. The great gayification of all the robots.
This reminds me of when Amazon.com was first a thing, and it was like, it was a going thing that Amazon didn't make a profit. You know, they were valued at quite a bit just because of like venture capital and stock market and stuff, but they didn't turn a profit. Well, now look where we are. So many years later, they run the world. Does IDW losing money affect retailers at all?
Not really. I mean, it sounds like they're going full forward with their normal publishing plans.
Yeah.
What's affecting things is their editorial decisions. You know, again, give me my gay Transformers.
Yeah.
and there's just a lot of, like, they relaunched G.I. Joe, and it's like, you relaunched too much, nobody cares.
Yeah, this current run, I feel like people are kind of,
I don't know if they're making money on their Marvel license right now. It's slowed down for us. The same with their Star Wars license. So I think there's just, in general, not quite the return they may want off of those.
Okay. Right.
You know? Because
are they making us privy to business information that companies would not necessarily share in the past? Are these experiences that other companies go have their ups and downs, but we're not, you know, they're sharing this with us publicly, but other companies.
I don't recall too many other publishers being like, man, that sucked last year, you know.
Yeah.
Usually it's just a third party reporting, like looking at all these down numbers, you got to assume this is the problem, you know.
I think unless you're a publicly traded company, you probably try to put the best face on. It's like, oh yeah, we had a great year, but don't look at our financials. The John Newbery Medal is annually given to the most distinguished contribution to American literature for children, and it's had a 100-year history, and for the first time in its 100-year history, Jerry Craft earned the honor for New Kid, the first graphic novel to win the Newbery. Mm-hmm. New Kid, I saw it sitting on the table over there. Has anybody here read it?
Nope. We keep selling it, which is nice. Yeah. The educators love it. It's very popular in the schools. Mm-hmm. So partially I don't have enough that I feel okay keep taking a copy out. And also I'm just not motivated to read about that subject matter. Mm-hmm. I should. Maybe I will. I'm too busy reading my gay comics right now.
I did overhear a customer in the store say that you should rename this one section of the store the woke section. Yes. Yeah. So if you want your woke comics, come down to Comics Dungeon.
It's the woke nook.
Woke nook. There you go. That's cute.
Woke nook.
All right. So New Kid, if you, I'm assuming it's young adult, maybe middle grade.
I think so. Yeah, I think it is.
When you're having your middle-age crisis, read some New Kid.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. All right. It's, so check it out. Swamp Thing's coming back with looks like an all-female creative team. Is this the first time in Swamp Thing's history that it's been all-female writer-artist?
Nancy Collins did some really, really terrific stories throughout the 90s, and I got really into her as a writer. I think she may be the only female writer that's taken on the character, but I reserve the right to be wrong. I really enjoyed Nancy's work a lot, and I also got into... She's the one who created the character, the vampire hunter, Sonya Blue. Mm-hmm. And there are a series of like 3 or 4 Sonya Blue books that I really enjoyed. I think they're all out of print, but I keep seeing them in thrift stores and wanting to rescue Nancy's books so that, you know, she's not lost to time. Anyway, mm-hmm. Our good friend, Mr. Swamp Thing.
John E. Boylan
has a series of interviews he's done with Nancy for his Swamp Thing fanzine called The Holland Files.
You are a contributor.
I am a contributor. In fact, I'm in my mind, I'm writing the next one.
Well, be present, Cole.
Sorry. There's a lot going on in here right now.
Anyway, this new run of Swamp Thing is written by Maggie Stiefvater with art by Morgan Beam. Morgan might be a gentleman. I don't know. I'm just assuming.
It's a lady. It could be a name for both or all, rather.
Anyway, that's basically all I want to say about that.
Terrific. Good job, man.
I didn't know that Hulu had solicited a Howard the Duck TV show. But it doesn't really matter because they've already canceled it, along with Tigra and Dazzler. So that brings the Jeff Loeb era of Marvel TV to an end.
Yeah.
To a halt.
But they're still doing MODOK.
Yeah, MODOK and Hitmonkey. Never heard of Hitmonkey.
Are those still going to be on Hulu, or are they going to be on the Disney Plus?
They're still in the works. Is up in the air.
All right.
I would have liked to see a Howard the Duck cartoon.
Yep.
But
everybody's afraid of Howard.
Yeah. I want Howard to be done like BoJack style.
Mm. Yeah,
Howard's a very BoJack character. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Then he would. That would make him. Yeah, that's a really good insight. Yep. I finally clawed my way through the end of the last season of BoJack.
I'm not in the mood to be depressed right now.
I finished it.
We went through our depressive year. Now we're into the joy year. We're trying.
I'll just say this. There's some triumphant moments, but it's still... It went from being like this weirdo comedy to being like hardcore drama that I never laughed at for the last two parts of the last season. I never laughed at all.
It cuts a little too close
it
to
does.
The bone.
It really does. I know those people in that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, we never knew you Howard the Duck cartoon.
If you want to learn more about Howard the Duck,
check out the Panel Jumper episode An Odd Duck at thepaneljumper.com near you. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And Nicole, let's start with you.
Do you want a tag team?
We go on tag team.
And Nicole and Chris, what do you want to tell us about?
I feel like we're about to Power Rangers. Like, are you the lion and I'm the...
Could do the Dragon Ball Z thing where we like...
Oh, yeah.
Join and
something.
Become greater than our individual parts. I don't know. However that works. Dragon Ball. So a new book came out this week, which is 3 weeks in the past to y'all, maybe more. And it is from Aftershock Entertainment, and it is called Undone by Blood, The Shadow of a Wanted Man.
Oh, no. My brain thought this was a Vault comic.
Oh.
I've given false information to humans. I didn't even look at it. Anyway, that's continue. Okay.
It is written by Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson, and art is also credited as a co-creator, Sammy Kivela. and a whole bunch of other people. How did you like it?
Well, I'm a big Lonnie fan. They do Black Stars Above, and these two people, Lonnie and Zach, worked on The Dregs, which I talked about a very long time ago, from Black Mask. So I was already pretty much in. Mm-hmm. I was like 50% in. I really like what they're doing here. So did you want to give the synopsis, or do you want me to?
We could tag team it.
Okay.
So there's a framing device.
Chris, what happens on page one?
Yes.
Nicole, what happens on page two?
Back and forth. There's a framing device.
Discuss.
I thought you said this guy. I don't know what. So the framing device is a cowboy story, which is actually the book the main character is reading called The Shadow of a Wanted Man. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that I immediately tuned into this was because visually, Sammy Cavella is kind of channeling a bit of Darwin Cook and Eduardo Risso. And they'll continue to bring up parts of this story that she's reading. And essentially the cowboy is comes back home to discover like his child's been kidnapped.
Right.
And but then you jump to 1971.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you meet this 18-year-old woman who is trying to find out who murdered her family a year ago. She's going through this small town and aggressively trying to get answers, to her dismay. Mm-hmm. She's, you know, full of a lot of chutzpah, but she doesn't necessarily have the brawler mm-hmm. ability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, the art also reminds me of David Lapham of Stray Bullets with a little bit of J.H. Williams III in some of it.
I could see that.
It's like a whole smorgasbord of influences I'm seeing here. And just amazing panel work, amazing compositions, and it really knocked it out of the gate for me. So, yeah, that's basically the full setup there. Don't want to give away too much more, I guess. It does give you three or four pages of text in the back that's from the story that she's reading, The Shadow of a Wanted Man by Elmore Lockwood. And so, like, just a very strong first issue for me.
So yeah. I read an advanced copy of this, and it didn't have this chapter in the back, so I need to read
this. You need to read this now.
Yeah. I actually have read the second issue as well, so I have a little bit more of the story.
Cool.
But, yeah, I think this will also read really, really well in a trade, because I feel like when I got to the end of the first issue, I was like, no, give me more.
That's a good sign.
Yeah.
It's also worth noting a very high quality paper. It's a cardstock cover. It's just like a really good presentation for, where is the price?
I think it's $4.99.
Is it? Huh. There's no price on the thing. Fix that. Okay, there you go. $4.99. So yeah, really just a nice presentation. Might be asking a little bit much for a first issue. Mm-hmm. That might scare some people away, but it's worth it for the content.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
So yay.
All right, Undone Blood or The Shadow of a Wanted Man. Mm-hmm. Thank you both. Cole Hornaday, what do you want to tell us about?
Well, about 2 weeks ago, I made one of those mistakes during my work day where I did a deep dive into somebody's exhaustive listicle about the best 100 horror graphic novels ever written.
Yeah.
And so I wasted my time and didn't get any work done because I was flipping through this whole list. And the reason why I was so compelled is that I was counting how many of them I had read, how many of them I'd started and not finished, and how many I had not read. Out of the 100, I'd only read about 35, which I thought was really embarrassing to me. And I
consider that a win for me.
Well, you know what? That's very kind of you. But I realized on the list that one of the, they weren't necessarily ranked, they just were, these are the things, was Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy's maxi series called The Wake from 2014. And I realized back that Chris had recommended that I read it. I read like the first couple of issues, and then I either lost interest or there was a long delay.
There was a delay, I think, between the mid part of the story because it turns into a different book.
Entirely.
Yeah.
So what Chris is talking about is it starts out in Gig Harbor, Washington, and we have our protagonist, Dr. Parker, who's an oceanographer, and she's detecting the signal. And it starts out, you think it's kind of like a Shape of Water kind of thing. She encounters, she gets taken into this super secret group of scientists and oceanographic explorers because there's some mystery signal at the bottom of the ocean, and then we discover that there are actually these mer creatures. They call them mers that live down there, and Sean Murphy's artwork was good back then and just as good as it is now in his White Knight stories. So it feels kind of like horror movie-ish. It feels kind of John Carpenter-ish. Yeah. It feels kind of The Abyss-ish. And then...
Deep Star Six-ish.
Deep Star Six-ish in particular. Yeah. And then... or Leviathan.
Yeah.
And then, wham, bam, we jump 200 years into the future.
And it's Waterworld.
And it's Waterworld. It's like a more compelling Waterworld than Waterworld.
Does Sean Murphy draw Gig Harbor underwater?
No, because that's the early part of the story. So did they go... Parker and company wind up in a lab at the bottom of the ocean. But I mean, he's always been a really, really gifted artist and designer. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't pull any punches. It's just that the story takes this. There are some hints because we get these weird flashbacks to like a million years in the past, 100,000 years in the past, and they're intercut with strange technology. You see cavemen with strange tech and stuff like that, and different cultures warring with not a lot of explanation. And I think that was another reason why I was like, I don't know where this story's going. I'm confused.
Snyder's got this thing where he's like, I'm doing this thing, and now it's this thing, and I don't even know what this thing is. Yeah. And you're like, all right.
Ultimately, and things do come together. The characters that we met in present day Pacific Ocean does loop back together into the world of the water world of the future. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to give too much away because I think this is a really fun read. And I picked up this hardbound edition. It was printed in 2014 at the library that contains all 10 issues. Snyder is not quite the top of his storytelling game. I think The Witches is a much better, obviously, horror story he's done. I can't stop praising Murphy. But what does bug me is that this just kind of turns into this... It really does turn into a B-grade horror sci-fi story because I think Snyder misses a lot of opportunities to discuss environmental issues. But also, the mere creatures are just monsters.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know... We learn that there's some type of seeding thing that happens where a more intelligent race of beings seeds planets, and that's why the mares have always been had a parallel evolution to us, and it's all about competing for who owns the planet. There's not a lot of rhyme or reason why. I thought it would be a far more compelling story if we knew more about who the mares were, why they hate us. That was just kind of a straw man that was a little bit disappointing. I still think it's worth reading. I think it's fun. I think that Snyder has matured as a storyteller, and this is just an indication of how good Murphy is going to be and that he himself will become a really terrific one-person creative show, you know, before too long in his career.
Yeah, we're there now. Yep. I think. Yeah,
that's what I was foreshadowing. I was foreshadowing what's already happened.
Meow.
Yeah.
Meow.
Meow.
Yeah.
I'm okay. Like Dr. Manhattan. I see it all at the same time.
Yeah.
All righty. The Wake.
The Wake.
From Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy. Thank you, Cole. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. Coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com, and our friends get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week, the questions come to us from Nicole. Lay it on us, Nicole. What? I can see them right there in front of you.
I don't write things. Okay. I tried to theme this. It didn't work. So we're just going to roll with it.
Okay.
When did Howard the Duck run for president? Isn't that a great start?
1972? Six?
Yep. Oh, Cole got it.
There you go.
Howard ran against Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford, but America wasn't ready for a duck president.
Get down, America.
Damn.
Yes.
It's like y'all did like a deep dive on Howard or something.
You're wrong.
Yeah.
Wow, okay, I don't... Wait, what is... Hold on a second. What did I do? Okay, there's no theme to this at all.
Yeah,
okay.
We're getting that.
Go okay, right. Great. In the first issue of Black Panther...
I'm sure it meant something at some point.
I'm totally awake. What is the Wakandan hero chasing?
In the first issue?
Glory. Yeah, this seems to be Jack Kirby time.
Frogs.
Yep.
Amy.
Yep.
King Solomon's frog. This mystical artifact allows for... Artifact? Allows for time travel and teleportation. All right. Still...
Quick note. Still to make the frogs work, you have to make them hump each other.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you got to rub them against each other.
Oh, is that nice. Real?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, it's just like Dorothy. You got to click your heels together.
Jack Kirby's period is insane. Yes. And they actually had his version show up during the Christopher Priest version.
Right.
And he looked insane because Jack Kirby drew him. So, yes.
But those reality warping frogs were something else.
Wow.
Okay, there's some things in here that aren't even quiz time, so we're just going to roll with it.
Okay, wait.
Here's a comic book quote, DC All Access. So my big question is, this is my best quiz time yet. So my big question is, do you hate Superman? And Frank Miller says, of course, who wouldn't hate someone who flies, someone who's just loved by everyone, who is the handsomest guy who could get all the dates? Of course, I went for the underdog who has a nasty streak to him and played a much nastier game than Superman. In reference to Miller's classic, The Dark Knight Returns, stupid. Anyway, what are superheroes called in Alan Moore series such as Promethea and Tom Strong?
What are they called?
They're not metas.
They are heroes, but there's an adjective to it.
Capes?
Science heroes?
Enhanced?
Yeah, science heroes.
Science heroes.
And of course, the bad guys are science villains.
That's right.
Ooh. And then I have another quote, because this is where we're going tonight. Sorry, guys. This just speaks to me.
You could just say, who said this?
Oh, there you go.
Throw up some names.
Okay, here you go.
Multiple choice.
Who said this, then? My experience of life is that it is not divided up into genres. It's a horrifying, romantic, tragic, comical, science fiction, cowboy detective novel. You know, with a bit of pornography, if you're lucky.
Alan Moore.
Alan Moore. Yeah. What tipped you off the pornography?
The pornography.
All right. Well, that is... Who said
something?
This?
I don't know. This is Nicole's Tired, the quiz time.
And thank you, Nicole. And thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.